This episode of the Board Game Barbecue Podcast is proudly sponsored by Hyper Viper Games. Head to hypervipergames.com, that's Viper with a Y, to find the most affordable, high-quality playmats for your enhanced gaming experience. 3mm thick, stitched edging, multiple sizes and designs. That's hypervipergames.com. Welcome to the Board Game Barbecue, possibly the fastest-growing board game community in the world. We are more than just a podcast. Join us on Discord to play games all the time with people from all over the world on platforms like Tabletop Simulator, Tabletopia, Board Game Arena, and any others. Join us in our Facebook community to discuss not only the topics of the week that come up in our podcast, but also the board game bracket and anything board games. But we still are a podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy the show. The Board Game Barbecue, brought to you by Addicts, Not Experts. Hello and welcome to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. I'm your host, Steve, and apologies in advance. I've been getting over a little bit of a illness, so I might sound a little bit like I'm talking through motorbike spokes or something like that. So we'll see how we go. But joining us today, we've got three people, and we've got, firstly, I'll go to the other person who doesn't sound 100%. Mitch, how are you doing?
Yeah, not 100%. But all in all, I'm well. Thanks, Steve.
And we've also got Jules. How are you going, mate?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Joining the three of us, though, is a special guest, and I think this is the first time I can safely say that we've got a former captain of an Alaskan salmon boat online. Dominic Krafuschets, how are you going?
Very good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure, for sure. Look, to be honest, I think we should start there. Can you expand on your journey into board games? It's quite fascinating.
So my journey into board games is long before the fishing boat captain. I came from kind of a little bit of a geeky stick in the mud family, I'd say. And we didn't watch much TV. And so we played a lot of board games. And I think the real reason is my dad was raised by missionaries in China. And so I have a little bit of a fundamentalist background.
Okay.
Even though he strayed pretty far from that. So, you know, television and pop culture and movies and dancing wasn't really part of our deal. And we played board games, I think, about three times a week, just for my whole life growing up.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Any standouts from that time and, like, games that stick with you?
God, yes. So, I mean, Charades, Hearts, Acquire, Risk. I still think Monopoly's fun if we change some of the rules. we played Civilization, Diplomacy. We played a lot of games.
Yeah,
a lot of fun stuff.
That's almost uncommon in this hobby to have an extensive range of games to be played as a young person. Usually we get the similar standard mass market answers. So.
Well, in Australia, we didn't get any of those games until like 2010 anyway.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. Good point.
Yeah, we played a version of Bananagrams back in the 70s, a version of Telestrations. We played a lot of party games at like holidays and at ski lodges. And then my dad taught me chess when I was really young at 4, and he entered me into a ton of competition. So I was like a competitive chess player in 7th and 8th grade. And then it was all downhill from there.
It's funny. I've had a similar experience with Bananagrams and also with another game where Time's Up, where I grew up playing our own versions of those games, and then you see them as a produced game and you're like, I could have done that. We were doing this 20 years ago.
Oh, no. Yep, especially when they're so successful. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. So I missed the boat there.
You're trying to bring it back in.
Yeah, no, that's it. So Alaska.
But before we get into that too, just in case people are tuning in for the first time in our show, how the format works is we're going to talk to Dominic, as we are currently, about his space in the hobby, and then we'll carry on to our regular segments, which is our Sizzling Games and Swear an Oath. And if we've got time, we might mention a bit about Kickstarter, just in case you are tuning in, you're not sure how the format works. But we'll head back to Dom, and I got to admit, you're actually the first person in this hobby that I actually found out anything about that wasn't just that was just that, because one of the first games I bought was Wits and Wagers, and on the front cover of the rule book is meet the game designer and this story about you. And then it goes onto this like 4-page animated, beautiful, well, not 4-page, but like the animations are over 4 pages of this little, almost like a kid's story about the, the story of North Star Games and how you came about that. So it's a fascinating thing.
Yeah. So I'll tell that story. I mean, do you want to know which parts of it are true?
Are you telling me that everything I read isn't true? That's
not right. Well, it's mostly true, actually. I'd say we kind of smashed up a bunch of almost sinking stories together because I captained that boat for 12 seasons. So there were a lot of sinking stories that were just pushing me, not just sinking, but sinking was one of them that was pushing me to really wanting to start the company that I'd been dreaming about and designing games for, you know, for decades. The one specific story was actually my first season. So it was 12 seasons later that we actually I finally jumped ship. Engine died. No, did engine die? No. Engine didn't die. What happened? All of our lights went out. All of our navigation went out. The windshield wipers went out. We were in a storm. And so I had no radio. This was before cell phones were out there. No contact with any boats. No Loran, which is how we, you know, navigated. No depth sounder. And we opened up the floorboards and we had water coming all the way up and it had just submerged our batteries. And so we also had no bilge pumps. And
that's a great start.
My first season of full captain. I mean, I've been crewing for a decade, but yeah, it's my first year as a captain.
I can see why you stayed on for another 11 years. It sounds really exciting.
Well, I thought I would get better stories, you know. But we had the bilge pump. So we were able, so the bilge pump runs off of the engine room, and we were able to bilge pump. And we had to really figure out, like, how are we taking on this, all this water? And the bilge pump that works off the engine was not pumping as fast as the water that was coming in. Mm. Turns out we had gotten, it was just a bunch of rookie maneuvers. We had not lashed on our one of our tie ropes very well on the front. And it had fallen into the water, gotten into our prop, clunk, 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 clunk around in our prop. And we had a prop access hole so that we could cut webbing out of the prop. And so above our prop is this round cylinder that spins, and it was hitting it right at the right area to just spin the whole thing off. So there was like a 2-foot hole in the bottom of our boat.
Oh gosh.
And then over the next 12 seasons, that probably happened 3 or 4 times, but we kind of knew right away where to go. And it was only an issue if we had a huge pile of fish down there and we had to pick through the fish quickly to get to the prop access hole. But yeah, so that's the deal. And then I did go up to the flying bridge. So everything is true in that story, except for on the flying bridge, I did not guide myself home by the North Star. The North Star, that was just a tie-in to the company name. I did choose the North Star because of my fishing experience.
Sure.
So there is a tie-in, but that was just to kind of wrap up the whole story into a pretty bow. Yeah, it was rainy, and really, I couldn't see the stars, but I could see the lights in the harbor.
Yeah, it's a fair point. In the middle of a storm, you don't really see stars, do you?
But I think we should just edit that bit out, Steve, and just go with the license.
Very good. It's a great story. And what was so you've obviously had a board game history, and then you've had this other career, and you've decided to go into board games. Was it? And again, I'm going to use a terrible analogy. Was it like hook, line, and sinker all in, or was it something you did on the side for a while until you knew that it was, you know, you were capable of doing this as your job essentially?
Yeah, that's kind of, I guess it's a hybrid. I designed games starting in sixth grade. I think I started designing them pretty consistently. And it was always, I wanted to start a game company. All through high school, that's what I expected to do. I wrote a business plan for my economics paper. My final economics paper, for some reason, was a business plan for the company I was going to start. It's kind of funny to look back at it now because it makes no business sense. And then I worked on the fishing boat in the summers. And so that was kind of what supported me. But really, I wanted to start this board game company. So at some point, I decided to get an MBA. I knew nothing about business, and learn about entrepreneurship and try to find a business partner. Those were my goals. And so then I went to an entrepreneurship program, MBA program, and found a business partner and did everything that I really wanted to do. So I kind of was all in, you know, living off of credit cards to pay myself to start this company. But I did have an MBA, which was kind of my parachute. I figured I'd be able to find a job, you know, like a real job if I had to.
So then coming back to your board gaming history, so I did read just a little bit about yourself that I don't know if this is true or not. Maybe there are lots of untrue stories about you out there.
You can't trust captains. They always tell tall stories.
But it's said that you used to be a professional Magic the Gathering player. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's part of my gaming.
So where in your history does that fall? Is that pre-
So it was just before the ship sunk, but...
Both. Yeah. So I went to the very first pro tour, which I think was, I don't remember when it was, 95. I went, and that was a call in. So I had to be one of the, I don't know, hundreds of callers. And I just like called for like 45 minutes straight. And then they answered it. And I thought I was just being silly by keeping trying. But, so the first one was a call in, and then the second one was, you know, invite. And then I was on the perma invite list for about 5 years. Wow. And so I went to all the ones that were convenient. I couldn't go to the ones when I was on the boat in Alaska in the summer.
Mm.
And did fairly well, won like $30,000 over the time period, but it was
nice.
Kind of more of a hobby. You know, it was what I did it for fun and than anything.
Yeah, it's come a long way since the 90s. So much has changed in Magic the Gathering space.
Yeah. Are you still a Magic player?
I'm not. I was a long time ago, but I always like to play the standard. So what's new? So it gets expensive.
Was there not enough take that in Magic for you, Jules? Like, when Jules is our resident, you know, stab you in the back guy. He loves that sort of action. So
that's what Magic the Gathering is, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. No, it's an expensive hobby these days. It's its own world, and so keeping up with it is pretty intense.
Hmm. So I have a question, Dominic, in regards to the company and the games that you've decided to publish. There's such a huge diversity in what you carry, and you know, you go from Happy Salmon all the way up to sort of heavier games, Taverns and Teeth and Fall and so forth. Is that a conscious decision you guys made to have that sort of diverse spread across sort of that spectrum?
Well, I guess it was a conscious decision. I mean, it wasn't like a pre-planned, but you know, we knew we were really messing with our brand as we were doing these things. It's really been problematic on the business side. It's not as smart. I don't recommend any entrepreneur to do that. It confuses your customer and it confuses the brand, and it makes it harder to grow the company because it's harder to have a group of fans that you're talking with and have a conversation with. It's harder to build a community when the community is so, you know, different.
Yeah, fair point.
So
yeah.
If you could focus in on what if you could go back in time, I guess, and pick the field or the genre of games that you wanted to focus on, what would have been your original, I guess, vision for what North Star Games would be and the games that you carry?
Well, so our original business plan, which was like I wrote in, 98? Was to, so there were companies that were bringing over these German games, basically Rio Grande and Mayfair, and then Uber Play and a whole bunch were jumping on board and trying to sell it over here. And I kind of thought that the Euro world was amazing. They had just these fantastic games that I was infatuated with, and there was so much to learn from them about how to design great games. But I thought that just bringing them over straight and thinking that the American public could just kind of jump into this world, I thought was the wrong approach. So I instead wanted to learn from the great game designers that were putting out these wonderful games and then re-envision games for the American audience. So that's what you see with Wits and Wagers and some right. of our earlier games that we tried was to bring these game design tenets that are really powerful. And so that was kind of the plan. And then I think what happened is we got successful in the mass market and there was it pulled our company from where I wanted it to be. And I lost control over the company, really. It became bigger than me. And so we increasingly kind of focused on mass market stuff, you know? And so then it wasn't until the hobby market had grown again that I said, I think the hobby market is big enough now, you know, I'm going to start a new side to North Star Games and do this other thing that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so really, if I could go back, I wouldn't focus on the product so much. I would focus on the customer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we kind of like stabbed all of our fans in the back and said, we don't care about you anymore. And so I feel bad about that because, I don't know. I always felt bad about that. And then now I wish I had those fans back. And you know, they've largely, you know, forgotten, I guess is maybe a little bit strong, but they've gone on and found other people that are meeting their needs and putting out the games that they get excited over. And now this, you know, the industry's exploded and I feel like we're behind the curve, you know, we're not one of the darlings like we used to be when we did Wits and Wagers and Say Anything. And we're, you know, trying to find our voice again.
Mm. Yeah. So, go ahead, Mitch. Sorry.
I was going to say, Quacks and Quedlinburg sticks out for me as something you've had massive success with. And that's not that distant past. I mean, it's like only a couple of years, I think it's been. So how was that for you guys when that sort of blew up?
Yeah, so that was fantastic. So that's not a game we designed in-house. We licensed that from Schmidt. And actually, we lost the license. So this is really sad that this year now we no longer have that license. Mm-hmm. But that was extremely good for us. And it really helped, I think, bring us back into kind of the hobby. Mm-hmm. And it was just lucky, really, that we got it. And that it won the Spiel des Jahres and that we had it. Mm. That has done wonders for us.
How did you come about getting the license? Did you look at it and know that it was going to be a smash hit, or were you taking a punt on it?
We did not know. So let's see. Nick and Luke went to Nuremberg. They were pitched the game. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we took it, and I don't remember exactly why, but I remember hearing about it as a potential. I think we were still kind of fumbling our way with trying to figure out what our relationship was with licensing other people's games instead of designing them in-house. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then it got nominated, and they said, that was the game! And I was like, yeah. Let's see if we can get it! And it had already been gobbled up by a distributor, Lion Rampart, mm-hmm. Which is a Canadian distributor. But we had such a good relationship with them that we had been building for the last 10 plus years. So we had a lot of sales relationships because we sold a lot of even Wits and Wagers into the hobby world. Mm. I'd say we probably sold 300,000 copies in the hobby, 400,000, you know, wow. and then, you know, pushing a couple million now, you know, in everywhere else. So they said, well, you know what? It's this game is better in your hands. We really can only do something in Canada, and we don't even have a sales team. We don't go to shows. We don't have a marketing team. Like, we just sell into stores. And so they basically, out of the kindness of their heart, kind of gave it to us in exchange for Von Clever, I think, the Roll'n'Write.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mostly, but now it hadn't won at that point. And I can't say whether they regret that decision. I'm sure they probably did in the end. But so it was kind of just it was luck, and then also just that we're a really good business partner, and we're honest, and we work well with people.
Nice, yeah. Well, it's been a massive hit. I mean, just people just can't stop talking about it. It's just such an addictive game, and thank you for bringing it into the hobby, basically.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Yeah, I've been thinking about, you know, if I can design a game that captures a little of that magic too.
Mm.
Speaking of games that you have created that do capture that magic, I still play Wits and Wagers quite a lot. It's such a great party game, and it's funny because you talk about it, talk about mass market, and Wits and Wagers wasn't a mass market game, but they've just released the Australia and New Zealand edition of the It's Vegas Baby Wits and Wagers in Australia, and it's in every store that you know, even the ones that don't sell board games very much.
Nice.
So it kind of it's one of those things where there would be some people in the board game hobby that would sort of turn their nose up at that because they're like, oh, it's a mass market game. But yeah, it's what I've been crying out for Wits and Wagers for years. In fact, I downloaded and cut out Australian version questions that someone did on Board Game Geek to add to my collection, just so that there was it wasn't all just pounds and ounces and whatever else. It was, you know, people, we didn't have to explain that or, you know, figure that out.
Conversions.
Yeah. So I've actually combined, because I've got the deluxe edition of Wits and Wagers and It's Vegas Baby. So I've made like my own deluxe Australian version of Wits and Wagers. From a fan's point of view, I'm really appreciative of that Australian New Zealand version. But the game itself, what I love about it more than anything is the fact that you can play it as the standard way with the, you know, I think it's up to 6 or 8 players, I can't remember, but having the ability to change that into groups, so you can actually have this game expand out to, you know, 30, 40, 50 people, and it still plays really well. The way that you don't even have to be good at trivia and still have a very good chance of winning this game is delightful. So
thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah. We put a lot of time and care into that way back when. You know, it's a little bit more of a genre now. There are a lot of people that have kind of jumped in. But when you're kind of creating a new genre, there's a lot of like rough edges to sand out and figuring out how to end. So it's more work than it would seem when you look in hindsight and go, oh, that's a real simple concept.
So one of the other games I wanted to bring up that's obviously a big hallmark of North Star games, at least in my opinion, is the Evolution series. I guess I wanted to ask, well, this is actually one of our community members' questions. They wanted to ask, what was the motivation or the idea behind Evolution? How did that come to be?
So part of the story is that I always wanted to do hobby games. That was always my plan from the start, and when I just saw how much money, like how many copies Rio Grande sold of Puerto Rico in its first 3 years, which was a huge hit. It was 15,000. I was like, I started doing the hourly wage that I'd get paid, and it was like 37 cents an hour for my time. And I was like, this doesn't make sense as a career.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so and then we'd look at Pictionary, and it sold, you know, a million copies in a year and a million copies in the next year. And it was getting, I think it had broken 20 million copies. And so you look at that and you say, oh, there's a game there.
Hmm.
So we got pulled, especially because I did the MBA route and I raised professional money. And so there was kind of like a monkey on my back that kind of pulled me into, I've got to do the right decision for these investors and their money. And these investors were like not wealthy people. They were friends and family and some angel investors. So honestly, I should have gone back and built a hobby division earlier. But I kept feeling guilty. Like I am the ambassador of these people's money and their retirement money, and I can't do the thing that I really want to do unless it's the right decision for them. And so I think that kept me away longer than it should have. And so once, you know, we really saw that the hobby market was growing and was a valid place to take a company and try to grow it, I was increasingly advocating starting a hobby division within our company. So then I was just looking for either a game to license or, you know, like I was looking for something there. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Target was coming to us every season and saying, look, we have all these hobby games out and they're so complicated and it's really hard. Like, I don't know how they're selling in mass market, but they are. like, why are you not making a hobby game for us? Like, we want you to make a hobby game for us. And so, for years they were asking us, and I kept saying, well, we can't just take a game and have it sell in the mass market. We have to build a brand, and we have to have a hobby brand. And we have to have fans, or it's going to go to Target and it won't sell.
Yeah.
So I was looking for a brand that I thought could be appealing to hobby gamers and could go into the mass market, and moms and casual gamers could look at it and say, oh, this looks like a cool game. And so that's why when I came across this game from a Russian biologist called, what's it called? Survival of the, I don't know. What with the Darwin? I can't remember what it's called now. and it was, you know, they were looking for an English partner.
Okay.
I played that game. I had some friends say, you really should license this. I played it and I loved the theme. I loved the ecosystem came to life. It felt alive. But there were a lot of flaws with the game mechanics. There was a lot of issues. And so we first licensed it. And then I realized as I kept tinkering with it, like I didn't want to license it. I wanted to just redesign the whole thing. So
yeah.
Changed the whole contract and paid a lot more money than we would have if we could have gone backwards. And just got the exclusive rights to build upon their mechanics. And then in the end, the game is so different that really there are multiple games out there that are much more similar than these two games. But we paid for it. I mean, like Ascension and Star Realms are practically the same game. Draw five cards, buy the cards from the middle. Like it's the same structure. Anyways, that was kind of what was going into it. And then with Target, once we designed this game, you know, I was playing the fine line of trying to make a game that hobby would like and could go into the mass market. And it just wasn't really possible. I realized in the end, I was like, I have to make a game that hobby people like.
Yeah.
And so Evolution was a little too complicated. And so that's why I was always kind of designing Evolution in the beginning, in the background, trying to figure out how do we get the game that Target really wants once we build a brand.
Well, Evolution was one of the earlier games that I played. My brother picked up a copy pretty much when it first released. And oh man, that game can be mean.
Like, it's so mean.
Really mean.
Oh, I apologize.
No, but that's what I loved about it. Jules loves that stuff.
Although, Jules is someone
who's, everyone Jules has played against.
As someone who's played Oceans, though, and I haven't played Evolution, which do you think is meaner? Because
Evolution,
I played Oceans 100% and you felt pretty mean.
Yeah, no, Evolution 100% meaner. And for the simple fact that you can't eliminate someone else's creature. That comes down by choice for yourself when you're playing Oceans. And so maybe I can talk about transition a little bit to that, Dom. You know, Oceans is your newest game and I love it. And I ended up replacing Evolution with Oceans because, you know, it is the next iteration of that system. Yeah, I still have a soft spot for Evolution in my heart because I love how cutthroat that game is. But the problem is introducing that to new people as one who's experienced with that game is a difficult thing because you really have to hold back your strategy. Otherwise, yeah, you lose friends.
Yeah, it's a big issue. I'm actually redesigning the whole system right now, and that's one of the big issues.
So,
well, that's not an issue for Jules. That's, he loves that. And if I can just share a little story, the time that I did play Oceans with Jules, I was cruising along, building up my little engine. I thought things were going really great until he started destroying me and picking me off bit by bit. And I had to employ the strategy of whinging and moaning about it. And having a little bit of a tantrum so that he'd leave me alone. And so then he went and attacked other people. And I think I ended up winning because, you know, he just left me be. So is that a valid strategy, Dom? Complaining and whinging.
Not encourage that as a valid strategy, but
I love the genius of Oceans. So I'd love to know how you got the next step from, you know, Evolution to Oceans, because to me, like, for those that aren't familiar with the game, in Evolution, you can turn your creature into a carnivore and essentially attack someone else's creature. When it drops to zero population, it dies immediately. However, in Oceans, you can attack each other, but your creature only dies on your turn if you cannot feed it, if it has no fish on it, when you need to age them. And that's when they die. So you don't get your creatures lost when other people hit you. It's on your turn if you can't feed. Well, if it's got no fish when you age it, they die. And I think that change completely balances out the game and makes it really brilliant in my mind. So for you, Dominic, what was the story behind that shift, I guess? I'd love to know.
Awesome. Yeah, keep talking about how brilliant it is. I love that.
It is. It really is.
So let's see. Long story, but I'd say all game design really at its heart. I approach it kind of, I fancy myself a little bit of an artist sometimes. It's a little frou-frou. Mm-hmm. So I look at the needs that we're meeting out there and like, why are people taking money out of their wallet and handing it? And like, what am I doing in their lives that they're finding, getting something out of it? When I love Evolution was a throwback to my Magic days. Mm. And when I played Magic, it was with a bunch of cutthroat, competitive, high-level people, and everyone was at a high level. Mm-hmm. And so Evolution is designed to work really well when everyone is at a high level.
Yeah.
Ooh. It sucks at trying to meet the needs of the current gaming community right now, because you're hanging out with friends and they're all different people and you want to like bring them in and have a good time with them. And this game is not designed for that at all.
No.
So
but it looks so cute and pretty on the outside. It looks inviting.
It's like one of those anglerfish at the bottom of the ocean that dangles the lights and the pretty things and then bites your head off.
Exactly.
And you get too close.
Sorry, I cut you off there.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, so really, there were several goals. I mean, the Oceans went through a lot of iterations. At one point, it was going to be designed by Nick Bentley. And in the end, that really wasn't working super well. So we brought it in-house. Mm-hmm. His goal originally was to try to make something, I think, simpler and lighter and more, you know, more Ticket to Ride-ish.
Okay.
And the more that we brought it to conventions, the less that was in vogue. So now we're getting into like Terraforming Mars and Gloomhaven and increasingly people are saying, I don't know, I don't want a game with only 10 traits. Mm. And so we'd say, well, how many traits do you want? And they'd say, I don't know, 100. I mean, 100 would be nice, I guess 50, but 100 would be nice. And there's no casting cost on these cards.
Yeah.
So balancing 100 cards is not possible. You're just going to have it's just going to be totally random in terms of, because you can't know ahead of time which of those 100 cards are going to be in play. So you don't even know what the environment's going to be.
Yeah.
Mm. So that just never worked. But so one of the goals was to create a game that hobby would like, you know, because we're wanting to become a hobby. Get, you know, want to create fans in the hobby world and be a hobby company. Mm-hmm. One of the goals then, like you say, with the attacky, you know, basically the needs of the marketplace is to have a game that is more fun when you're playing with new people and people who are not so cutthroat. And there's like going to be a wide level of skills.
Yeah.
And so that's where you found the transformation that takes place on the not going extinct. There's a couple other things there too. With Evolution, you draw extra cards for how many species you have.
Yes.
So it's really sucks when you get your head smashed in. And so we removed as much of the punitive nature as we could of like when you get attacked, it really wrecks your position. It doesn't feel good, as Mitch is attesting to when you're getting attacked. But it's not game defining. You can just create an engine that just allows everyone to attack you, and you just have like 6-7 creatures that you're aging every single time, and you know there's only a few little fish left over for people to attack. Mm-hmm. So it's not game defining when you get attacked. And there were a lot of different issues that went into there. The end goal was, how do we create it? I mean, this is an ecosystem game, so there has to be attacking.
Yes, and then, absolutely.
And then in the ocean, to further complicate it, every species is a predator. So there's phytoplankton, which lives off of light, and some of that is algae, and some of that is like just animals that just eat sunlight and just float around. And then every single species after that is a predator that just eats one bigger than the next. And so it would have been really disingenuous to the theme to not have attacking in it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I love that.
A bit of a random offshoot here, but we need you to settle an argument that's come up in the Board Game Barbecue a fair few episodes back. We had a thing called a board game bracket, and Oceans went up against Root as which one was the better game. And Jules made the argument for Oceans that it was more historically accurate than Root.
Well, scientifically, so, wasn't it? It was biologically scientifically accurate.
Scientifically accurate than Root. Now, yeah, we all know how scientifically accurate Root is, but does science play a hand here, or is it like are you making sure that these creatures are based on the science, like on science, rather than just going, well, this mechanic would work well, rather than going, oh, well, this mechanic suits this particular fish because this makes sense for that
species.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So theme in the evolution series is really, really important. With evolution, it was more important. With Oceans, we gave ourselves a little more leeway. Have you played Oceans, Steve?
I haven't played Oceans. I've played Evolution on the app, but I haven't played Oceans.
Okay, so there's a deck of cards called the Surface Cards, and there are 12 cards there. And then there's a deck of about 100 absolutely unique power
the
cards
deep.
Called
the Deep. Yeah.
The Deep.
That's where it really so starts to kick in.
So the Surface Cards have a lot of replay value. It's like a deep Euro game, and if you want to just study a closed system and get better at a closed system like a lot of Euro gamers do, that game works, and it brings stability to the ocean, to the ecosystem. Then we have what we call the unknown, and that's 100 power cards, which bring story and chaos into the stability that's been created with the surface ecosystem. And the way these two interplay allows us to create 100 unique cards, because we have a good idea about what the ecosystem is going to look like, because it's based on these 12 cards. Now, there's still like, you know, 5 or 6 different typical ecosystems, but it's a lot easier than now to know what's going to be on the board when you create these 100 cards. The surface cards mimic a real oceanic ecosystem, and one of the game designers that Nick brought on board is a professor of marine biology.
Ah, cool.
And so we spent a lot of time on trying to maintain a theme that builds a real ecosystem, oceanic ecosystem. When it comes to the deep, the metaphor is the unknown. So the surface is the known world, and so I was really wanting to play more to hobby here and allow us to go a little more into fantasy. But I wanted to stick with the science theme. So the way we did this is we had the known world and the unknown. And emotionally, the unknown is supposed to represent when you learn something as an inquisitive academic that just blows your mind. And yet it can't be true. And yet it is, like when you learn about nuclear power or you learn that time is relative. And there are so many things you learn and you're like, this can't be true. And yet it is. Mm. And so the important thing with the deep is it had to create that sort of emotion.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. I think you totally nailed that, because my first time getting my hands on the game, it's just here behind me. Going through the deep card, you're like, oh, that's ridiculous. That's game breaking. Oh, this is insane too. Whoa, that can't be right. Just every card feels game-breaking and powerful, but it, like you said, it all balances out. But you have this addictive feeling of like, oh, my power card. Now this creature's a kraken that has the ability to attack 5 times, you know? But then there's not enough fish out there.
yep, exactly. So
such a good... Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry, I should have interrupted you. But I wanted to bring back to the full circle to the science. Mm-hmm. So 75% of the deep comes from real scientific things that we researched.
Yeah.
But we amped up a lot of times their effect. But like Calamar Repair, lobsters do not die of old age. They do not age. And the reason they don't is because they have this stuff which repairs the telomere so that their DNA can split perfectly no matter how old they are. So there's a reason why our DNA stops replicating well as we get older. And lobsters don't have that. They die because they just get too big for their structure.
They can't feed themselves enough.
And so we take some of these things which are amazing and then incorporate them and amp them up, you know, to create that emotion that we wanted those cards to have. And then, like you said, Jules, what we've done with oceans is we've created like a limit before overpopulation happens. Yeah. Like we've created these rails so that you look at the card and emotionally you feel like it totally breaks it and it's just unbelievable. And then in actuality, it really breaks it for one turn, two turns before it has to like recharge. Yeah. And so nothing in there ends up being game breaking because we put some really tight, hopefully thematic rails on there.
Well, this is the thing that I thought, you know, I went through the game and you look, I really enjoyed it, and I'm not usually even into those, you know, take that games. And as I said, I've kind of told you how it went with our game. I was rolling along everything fine, and then Jules just started knocking the wheels off the front center. But the balance comes in because, you know, Jules was absolutely doing that, just being Jules, destroying everybody at every turn and just taking pleasure in whatever devastation and turmoil he could create for everybody. But once we got to the end and then started counting our points, we realized that he went too hard on that track and it cost him too much out of his bag to be you know, so aggressive that's how I just snuck home and won, because I kind of balanced that aggression and still building my other stuff up as well, you know, not spending as much to do it. So, yeah, even though it does look, as you said, even though it does look, you like think, oh, man, they're just going to destroy everybody, there's a balancing cost to that as well, and that played out really well, at least in our game.
And you alluded to it before. There is. You just want to play all the fancy cards, but yeah, there's an opportunity cost for sure. But you alluded to a little bit earlier, there's a little bit of fantasy trickled in the game. And I have heard that you plan to have a high fantasy expansion to Oceans. Is that still in the works?
That is in the works. We got a lot of kickback because I did such a good job of hiding the fantasy because people really don't know what's down in the deep, and their imaginations go wild and they're like, that's believable. Even though to me, I'm like, that's not believable. That's just a Kraken is just fantasy. You know, it's high fantasy.
I mean, this is a fisherman, guys. You got to listen to him. He knows.
Oh, God. So I didn't realize how vehement our fans were going to be against that idea.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. The kickback, it shocked me, actually.
Did you see that on Kickstarter?
Yeah, I was one of the original backers for Oceans. So, yeah, it surprised me.
Thank you. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's really nice that we have fans that really care. So it completely took me by surprise. And then I came back with another post and really just learning how to frame it correctly was what needed to be done. And I'm not using the word high fantasy anymore. I'm using the word mythology. And mythology has kind of a scientific, like you learn about mythology in school.
Yeah, cool.
And, you know, for me, mythology is largely just high fantasy that was written thousands of years ago, you know, but it's something you learn in school, as opposed to you don't learn about Star Wars or Harry Potter in school. So using that word is important.
Yep.
And so I thought we might be able to really look at some, and indigenous, I think just means like from a place. So all mythology is indigenous, but to what it means to people are mythologies that have been overlooked by cultures that are smaller. And so we'll look at these mythologies and maybe even try to bring out some of their art. And I haven't jumped on that side of things yet, but that is my plan. And so now we already have some art that has high fantasy. And so it's kind of hard to figure out what the artistic vision is going to be. But increasingly, I'm going to look to mythologies that are not as well known, which is a pickle because people say they want it, but if it doesn't resonate and they don't really know what it's trying to do, it's difficult. So as an artist, I need to find something that's really clear and powerful so that they can kind of latch into what that mythology is about, since they won't have any information about it ahead of time. Mm.
Yeah. So my
and
last
I can
sort of
probably flip over the card and have like a few sentences that teach people about the mythology.
That would be cool.
To help bring it to life, like bring context to the mechanics.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be awesome. My last sort of question on, I guess, this evolution series would be, you know, you've already said you're sort of reworking the mechanics of evolution, but is there another step that you have in mind for the evolution system, like microorganisms or space creatures? Or it was even mentioned in our Discord chat, single cell organisms.
there's so much. Yeah. So I don't think we've announced it, and I don't know if we should. We haven't talked about our strategy, but we are going to discontinue evolution, climate, flight, that whole system, revamp it.
Yes.
And part of the reason is, as I was designing these expansions, flight is incompatible with climate.
Yeah.
And it really bothers me. And and structurally, it's really impossible to solve it, I think. I mean, it's clunky. And even if you play it correctly, it's really clunky, like, to transfer between expansions. And it's really clunky. And so it kind of killed it for me, because I felt like I was asking our fans to jump through these ridiculous hoops. Mm. And I just wanted a cleaner system. So I've been working on these ideas. And in fact, that's how the Deep even came about, was me working on how to fix these issues in evolution. I was like, oh my God, this is how I can give them 100 cards over here.
Mm.
And so it's really just like, it's kind of like an expansion that I was working on for evolution that I jumped in and just put it into a game with oceans. So those are the main issues I want to solve are, that aggressive, have it be less punitive and a more inviting experience to new people. I want to bring the base set smaller. I want to have more expansions and have them all compatible. And so a new gamer and have this really small basic base game, and then they can take one expansion and learn one little concept and kind of take a bite. And a heavy gamer that is really looking for an epic experience can say, hey, I'm going to take this expansion, and this expansion, and we're going to mash them all together and have an epic experience.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's really the dream that everyone kind of wants. And that's the dream that I want. And then I'll be reinvigorated to keep working on a disease expansion, maybe a rainforest expansion, maybe a desert expansion, like all different ways.
Ecosystems.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's exciting. I watch this space, people. Like, I haven't come across many people in our community that have played Evolution or Oceans, but it is one of my favorite games, and I think it's brilliant and has such a genius system that underlines it, that can be expanded into so many different, you know, realms and ecosystems. Really, you can base it on so many things. You could make it hyper focused on an Australian ecosystem, or you could expand that to you know, all microorganisms, whatever
it may be.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, look, it's worked for Elizabeth Hargrave.
That's
just saying.
Right.
Yeah. She's awesome.
I'm very excited to see what you can do, Dominic, because I think this more people need to discover this game and this system, because I think it's very, very good.
Oh, thank you so much. Speaking of Elizabeth, we used to playtest weekly before this lockdown. So she will hopefully be a part of the playtesting when we are able to do such a thing again.
All right. Well, we might wrap up the grilling of Dominic for a little bit. And we'll go into our usual segments of the show. Thank you very much for that. That was really informative and interesting across all facets of your company there. So. From that, we'll move to our sizzling games.
Woo, woo.
The Sizzling Games segment, as per usual, is brought to you by Advent Games, who have kindly partnered up with us to do a giveaway this month. We are giving away a copy of Viscounts of the West Kingdom, which I sizzled back on episode 74. Fantastic game, and you can have it in your collection for $0, including postage. So all you need to do is go to Advent Games' website. That's adventgames.com.au. Head to their Coming Soon page. Have a look at what's coming soon, and then jump onto our Facebook community, find the relevant post, and comment there with what game you are most anticipating off that list. And you'll go into the draw. We are drawing it at the end of the month, which is only about nine days away. Actually less, because it's February, so like a week away. So make sure you get in, get it done, and you might be the proud owner of a fantastic Shem Phillips game. But with that, we'll move on to the actual sizzles. All right, so our sizzling games, I'm going to send it to, who have I got first here? I'm going to send it to Jules. Jules, what's been sizzling?
Cool. So my sizzling game this week is one I've just picked up recently, and I've already played it four times, maybe even five with a few people, and that's High Society. So a little, card game by Rainer Knizia. Oh, it's so good. It is a gem of a game. And before I even explain it, how it works, just go out and buy it, people. It's $20. Just go get it. It's a great game. But how it works, it's an auction game. And so you are playing as people in the high society. It's got a French sort of theme, the newest edition of it. And basically what you're doing is there's items worth points through 1 through 10, and there's a few negative cards in there that make you lose points or halve the value of your total points or make you discard one of your point cards. And everyone starts with a handful of money, and there's sort of a different range of cards from 1 through to 25. They don't have all the numbers in between, but there's cards between that range. And basically one player will flip out a card that will go on to auction. And if it's a point value card, you're bidding to win that card. So you just keep going around, you can pass, and those who do not win the card take their money back, the winner pays and keeps the card. When there's a negative card on the table, you're paying not to take the card. So you keep going around and bidding, and the first person to pass must take it, but then everyone that didn't win the or didn't take the card then has to pay the money, and the loser that took the card gets their money back. The wrinkle in the game that is so genius is at the end of the game ends once four of the green colored cards come out, and it just immediately ends, and you add up who has the most points and they win, except the person that has the least amount of money left in their hand is ineligible to win. So there's this brilliant tension between you bidding to win all the high point cards, but knowing I need to keep money in my hand to be eligible to win. And it is so genius. It is so simple. And the rounds are quick. You can play a game in 5 to 10 minutes. It's just so good. There's so many stand-up moments and cringe moments of like, you outbid me by one, but if I'm going to outbid you, I'm going to have to jump an extra 10 because of the cards I've got left in my hand. It's just so well done. So many great moments. I've played this just the other week. So when
I played this with you, Jules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played this with Mitch the other week. Just
for everybody's listening. Jules is
this going to be a similar story, Mitch?
No. So Jules has just explained to everyone how important it is to make sure you keep an amount of money in your hand so that you're not the person with the least amount at the end, so you can still win.
I'm not good at it.
And so that, you know, and Jules' strategy seems to be spend all of your money on the first card that comes out and then wonder about what he's going to do for the rest of the game, because that's what he did the first time we played. And I think you end up bidding on, well, it depends on how quickly those green cards come out.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about it. You don't know how quick the game is going to end. You might go through the whole deck, or you could end six cards in because four out of the six were green. Like, it's, you just don't know. And that's the other genius part of the game is, you know, you're trying to bid and win cards, but you just don't know how long the game's going to be drawn out.
Hmm. So you sort of, it's a balance between trying to say, well, I got to keep some of my money cards because there may be 10 more cards come out before this game's going to finish. So I've got to have something to stay in to bid or to make sure I don't get the negative cards. But then the game might be over in the next couple of turns, and then you've got all this money that you don't get exactly. anything for.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah,
it's a good one.
Yeah, it's so good. And look, the first time you ever play this game, you're probably going to lose because you need to understand the pace of the game. There's a rhythm to it and understanding the timing. But since then, Mitch, I have learned to hold my money a bit more and just be tactful and maybe pushing people just a little bit and then backing out. That's one of the things I love doing in the games, just nudging people a bit higher that really want or don't want a card. It's brilliant, guys. I think everyone should own it. It's a quick filler game and it's just awesome.
It's like 25 years old, isn't it? It's been around for
a while. It's a very old game and it's had, I don't know, it might be on its fourth edition, fourth reprint, maybe even more. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, there's a few.
It keeps getting reintroduced.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a great one.
So that's my sizzling game, High Society.
Yeah, nice one. Good job. All right, Mitch, what have you got for us?
So I went out to the Discord community this week and I had a bit of time on my hands and I didn't know what I was going to play and I put it out to a vote to see who what everyone would like to hear the most and you got to give the people what they want, right? They chose Waste Knights.
Yeah,
that's Knights with a K.
That was my vote.
Yeah. So Waste Knights is an adventure game set in a post-apocalyptic Australia. And if you've ever seen the cover, I know if you live in Australia or you've had much to do with Australia and see this box cover, you just fall for it straight away because this is amazing. It's got basically a shot from one side of Sydney Harbour looking across to the Opera House, but it's absolutely desolate. There's no water left in the harbour. It's just a big, dry bowl with the Opera House sitting on the other side and you know, this biker on just in front of you in the foreground looking out over the wasteland. It's absolutely amazing. It just captures you straight out. And that's what grabbed me when I got it off Kickstarter. So I've played it a couple of times now and I've played the two solo scenarios. So it is a co-op game. There's about eight different scenarios I think you can play and they vary in length and complexity. I think the longest is up to 8 hours, it sort of suggests in the book. So it's quite a...
Whoa.
Yeah, it's quite a long one that you could probably play over a few sessions.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do that. So I've at this point tackled the two absolutely strict solo... Because, I mean, as a co-op game, you could play any of the scenarios solo.
Yeah,
you could play a couple of characters at once if you wanted to do that. But there's also two scenarios that are just strictly one character solo mode designed for that. And look, it's a fun game. Like it's not super heavy. It's not really complex. The turns are all streamlined. You ultimately have a series of objectives that you sort of looking to go through and tick off as you go along through the story. And as you progress through each of those objectives, there's a story book where you know, it's like all those pick a path adventure type things. You look up the reference number in the story book and it'll give you a little narrative on what's happened in the story as you're going along. And then as you travel through the different regions and the different terrains on the board, there's different random events that will happen to you and challenges that will pop up, whether they be skill tests that you need to achieve or monsters that come out. I think I shared a couple of pictures. There's like cybernetic emus and Tasmanian devils with laser beams in their eyes and, you know, that sort of stuff. So, look, I didn't win either of the games. I got quite close to the end. I think I was about one objective off in the first game and the second game the big boss at the end of the scenario killed me. But it's just a fun game. Like it's not too much. You know, you can get through it and sort of enjoy it. It's light humored. There was a card. I went down to the city in the southeast of Australia. And in this game, it's called Maleburn. And it's the city has been overrun by a bunch of female warriors who share this massive disdain for men, thus the name Maleburn, and you know, you have to have a little bit of a combat with them down there as well. So, you know, just little things like that that pop up that sort of make it a bit funny and a bit sort of tongue-in-cheek interesting at the same time. But then you've got that whole RPG sort of thing where you when you do defeat certain challenges, you can your reward might be some extra item cards, so you can upgrade to like I've got it on the table here with me. You want actually like a pain saw, which is one of the items that you can get, which is effectively like a a juiced up chainsaw that you can use in hand to hand combat. Yes,
yeah, so because chainsaws don't inflict enough pain.
No, I need the extra. And one of the cool things about it actually that I think is a really good way to do it. They have different colored dyes, white, green, blue, and red. And you use different combinations of these dice whenever you're doing a skill check or you're attacking in combat and things like that. And the different colored dice have a different frequency of hits on them. So the white dice, I think they only have one hit and five misses.
Yeah.
Then the blue dice are a little bit higher again and so on. So as you upgrade your equipment or get better equipment or you increase your XP that gives you other abilities that you can increase as well, you start rolling different colored dice, which obviously then increases your ability and the chances of you being successful when you make those dice rolls.
Cool.
So, yeah, so it's, you know, it's just a cool little thing. So when you draw a monster out and he's got three red dice, you go, oof, I'm dead here. This is not good.
It's a little bit Champions of Midgard-y, the way that their dice work. You have dice values but different and you could go into a battle with multiple colors of dice to get different results.
Right. Yeah, they might have borrowed that. One other thing I really got the feeling, I don't know if anyone, we're all about the age, I think, that we may be familiar with the movie. There was a movie in the
It was the first question I was going to ask. Come on. Is this Mad Max the board game?
No, that's not the movie I'm going with, Steve.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'm not going there. There was a Rutger Hauer movie made in the early 90s, late 80s, I think it would have been. Probably late 80s, more than early 90s. Rutger Hauer was in it. Delroy Lindo, Vincent D'Onofrio, June Chen, I think is the name. And anyway, in Australia, it was called Salute of the Jugger. And I think in the US, it was called Blood of Heroes. I don't know if anyone's seen it or heard it.
Nah.
It's a fantastic film. If anyone's out there hasn't seen it, check it out. It's brilliant. It's about this group of people. They're a team, basically, and they travel around this wasteland competing in this sport. Which is, I don't even know what they call it, but the people who play it are called juggers, and they travel from town to town playing those town's teams, and then if they win, they get all these, it's not so much rewards, food, drinks, and whatever. Just playing through this game, I think they've taken a lot of inspiration from that.
Mm-hmm.
Even certain characters, like take, for example, the guy that I played today is called Sallow Lee, and I know most of you can't see this because you're listening and I'm watching, but he's there with some barbed wire clubs and some helmets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and as I said, his name's Sallow Lee. Rutger Hauer's character was named Sallow in that film. So
that's like a direct, yeah.
I don't know if they've pulled inspiration from that. There was another character that I stumbled into in one of the quests that sounded very similar to one of the characters that interacts with their team in the movie. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the film, and like seeing those sort of inspirations and things, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I really like that.
Mm.
So, all in all, I think it's done a really good job. It's made by a company called Galacta. I think they're based out of
Poland.
Poland. Yeah.
Mm.
Is there any Australian influence on as far as designers?
Yeah, I don't think so.
It's a big effort. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a big, huge river that runs right down through the center of Australia. So that's technically not there in real life.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
That's where all the water from Sydney Harbour's gone, though.
It's part of the storyline where the cataclysmic event that caused this to plummet into the state that it is caused that river. But, all in all, this is going to stay in my collection. It's a fun game. It's funny. It's enjoyable. There's lots of different aspects to it. If you get a chance, check it out. Especially if you're Australian, you'll love it.
Cool.
This is just made me think of a new topic for a future episode, Mitch. Because I did something similar yesterday, actually, on our Facebook community. I've hired out from the library a copy of Dune and a copy of Red Rising because of the board games. Mm-hmm. Like I've not I knew nothing of Dune. Well, I knew it existed, but I knew nothing of Dune until I played Dune Imperium, which is I know that's a rarity. Most people have done something, and then obviously with the announcement of Red Rising, I was like, oh well, I'll read that as well. It'd be good to do a topic on other forms of media that you've gone to because of board games. Now I'm looking to look up this movie that I should apparently have already watched.
Oh, it's a great film.
Yeah.
Great film.
Yeah, so that'd be interesting. Anyway, that was that. But anyway, yeah, that's so Waste Nights, eh?
Waste Nights with a K. Because someone said to me, oh, it's Nights with a K. I thought it was Nights, N-I-G-H-T-S, when you first said it. So, yeah.
That box cover is amazing.
Yes.
It's so good. All right, I'm actually not going to do a sizzle this week. As you can probably tell by my amazing voice, I haven't been the most healthy over the last few days, so I haven't actually had many games to play. And the ones I did, I've already spoken about in the past. So I'm going to pass the baton over to Dominic and see if he can talk about a game he's been playing.
Yeah, I'll talk about one. First of all, I have to say I'd never heard of Waste Nights. But I'm looking it up, and the art is spectacular. It looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. Not just the cover, but the cover is awesome. But yeah, they did it. They nailed it. It seems like there's a really good artistic scene in Poland for some reason. I feel like they have a lot of good artists there.
Mm. Mm.
So I'm going to go with a game. So I play games, often ones that I'm either designing or with the family. And now with the lockdown, there's really not much in between. And so I play a lot of apps. I'm not playing that many hobby games. I mean, I can convince my son to do it every now and then, my 10-year-old. So the game I'm going to go with is Shards of Infinity.
Ah, yeah.
Have you guys had much experience with it?
I little experience, yeah, but I had the physical version a while ago, but I haven't used the app yet.
Yeah, so you know this app. So I like deck builders. You know, my Magic days, I was into the draft games. So I was really into drafting. So Dominion hooked me, and Ascension, and Star Realms, and now Shards of Infinity, I think, is kind of like the next iteration of that Ascension. Star Realms shards. They're kind of like a conversation all building upon the last. I love it. So I was very surprised when I looked. So it's been out a few years now. And I've played over 1,000 games, and that was a while
ago. Wow.
Whoa.
They're just quick, you know, I play them at night and I play one in 10 minutes and then I play another one and then I play four before I go to bed. And clearly there's some nights I must play more where I go until like 2 a.m.
That all sounds familiar.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, that would never happen.
So you guys went into a little more detail. It is a deck building game. And I would say it adds a few mechanics on top of what you'd find in Star Realms or Ascension. But the basic structure is the same. There's a line of cards in the center that you're buying from. And then when you play a card, it either has an effect for that turn or there's a permanent and it stays in play. And in Shards, they're called champions. And then they stay in play unless they get attacked. And this is using the same structure as Star Realms, where you have life and you're attacking someone. I don't think... Can you gain life in Star Realms? Do you guys remember?
I'm not a Star Realms player. I've never actually tried it. So.
Okay.
No, well, can you? You can definitely get shields and things.
So this one, there's four different factions, and one kind of focuses a little bit on gaining life, one on damage, one on, I guess, drawing cards, and one on maybe, one's artifacts, I guess, which maybe work with everything. Anyways, I think the reason that I love it is a game like Star Realms is nearly 100% just buying the right cards at the right time. And then the game plays itself out. Same with Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain simplicity to that, which is nice. So actually, the first jump to Shards of Infinity for me, I think, was almost too thinky. I was like, oh, well, if I play this before this, and okay, now I'm going to get the card from the graveyard, and that's going to be over here. And so there was a lot of bushy trees, which I actually kind of played against it at first for me. But now that I've played it 1,000 times, it just has a, you know, yeah. So now I have already thought through a lot of those things, so they come naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But it has this really, really fascinating balance. So kudos to Gary and his team. He was also a pro Magic player back in when I was playing. They found they complicated the cards a little bit. So a lot of cards do more than one thing. Mm-hmm. And so a card that might be good early, then they'll add something that makes it good later too, so that there aren't dead cards in the set. And then there are power cards in every set that are just one-offs. And they're super powerful, and they're kind of game defining. And so 1,000 games into this, I can still get surprised by the game.
Yeah,
you
know, that's cool.
Wow, I've never played this combo. That is awesome. And then, you know, in the future, I'm looking for that, you know, and every now and then I go, there's no way I'm going to win unless I just try to get lucky with this combo. So now I'm going for this combo. So I think it's really tough to describe more. It's a deck builder, so it's a little bit on the abstract side, as usual, mm-hmm. as they all kind of are a little bit. And this one maybe even a little more so than, you know, like you're playing Waste Knights. That's clearly a great storytelling thematic game.
Mm-hmm.
This one is a game that has fairly slim rules, not like High Society. Wait, that's on the other extreme. But fairly slim rules, and yet it really captures just a fantastic balance. And people like Justin, Gary, and myself, I think we gravitate towards those because we played on the Pro Tour so much. And so,
makes
sense. So replayability is sometimes, we overemphasize replayability sometimes.
I had a
similar situation with Dominion recently. I've played Dominion a lot, and I hadn't played it for a fair while. And then I visited for family, and we pulled it out and we played a few games. And I had my best game of Dominion I've ever had in one of those games. And I actually lost. I didn't win, but I just had this deck that was so perfect. And it was like I would see every hand in my deck every round. So I was able to cycle through every round. I'm like, I'm enjoying this so much. I ended up losing by 1 point. And that was on a mistake that I made because I didn't realize how close the end of the game was. But so I can relate to that idea of that. I haven't played it 1,000 times, but I have played it a lot to still be able to come across the beauty of deck building and the variation you can have in the cards is that you can still come across these combinations that you'd never even discovered in the past.
Yeah.
But just on Shards too, I think it's important to note that, Dominion in Australia, to buy a base box of Dominion, you're looking at around that $60, $70 mark, and the same for all the expansions. Like, you can pick up Shards for $30. It's and it offers more. There's no doubt it offers more as far as, you know, Dominion being the first, you know, true deck builder. That's pretty much all it is, where Shards has a bit more going for it. So, yeah, it's if you're looking at potentially trying out deck building, I think it's a great starting point.
Yeah, great value for sure.
There we go, Shards of Infinity. So that'll do us for the sizzles today, and we'll move on to Swearing an Oath. Swearing an Oath is brought to you by our sponsors, 2D6 Games. 2D6 run an amazing service where they offer free postage Australia-wide as well as door-to-door service in Brisbane. It's quite an experience to have someone turn up and hand you over a game and have a chat. If you're in Brisbane and you're lucky enough to experience that. But they are a fantastic business. Check them out at 2d6games.com.au, and maybe your next Oath game will be from them. So I'm going to go first here because my Oath is the most boring of all of us. I'm going to spice it up a little bit today, though. So my Oath is just to complete Pandemic Legacy Season 1. And as previously alluded to, haven't had the greatest week, so we haven't moved on. We finished October last. So we're up to November, but we haven't started yet. So we've already made plans for Sunday. We're going to play it. So, but that'll continue. So hopefully that will be it. We'll knock it out. And we know that there's no more than four plays left. So hopefully by the next episode, we'll be finished. But because I didn't succeed in playing it between the last two episodes, I feel like I should add something to my oath. So a game that's been much talked about lately on the podcast, I'm going to add the solo game Under Falling Skies to my oath list. So going to give that one a go. Actually, no, you know what? I'm gonna cheat. Only because I know this is happening. But later today, and it's exciting because this is a game that I've been wanting to play for a long time. This afternoon, I have a group coming over to play The King's Dilemma. It's not my game. It's someone else. They just said, can we organize a game day and I'll bring it along? I'm like, yes, you can.
So these other people said, can we have a game day and come to your house?
At my house. Well, not entirely. They asked if I wanted to be part of it, and I said, yeah. And then I said, my wife is actually going to a game night tonight as well. And I said, well, I've got the kids. Is there anywhere nearby? And they said, well, can we just come to your house? So, yeah, it wasn't necessarily them inviting themselves. So.
They do listen to the podcast, don't they? So,
yeah.
I can say, well done, folks. You've just self-invited yourselves to Steve's house for games.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I'll make that. That's a bit of a cheat one. But, yeah, definitely be playing King's Dilemma later today.
I'm very keen to hear about that one because it has been high on my wish list, but I haven't pulled the trigger because I just don't feel like I've got the right group for that game, and it really needs the right group. So
yeah, it's also hard to get as well. So I'm very happy that Hannah's uncle has it and he's coming over. I've never met him before, so this will be great.
It's like a multi-session game too, right?
Yeah,
it's many sessions.
This is the plan is to have like an ongoing regular meetup, and we work through it. So
yeah, right,
yeah. There we go. So that was my oath. How did you go, Mitch?
Well, I had so just so that Dominic knows,
you forgot, didn't you?
I've had a bad run with oaths lately. I've had a bad run, and when we fail to complete an oath, the punishment is that you have to double up and take another one, so that you then have sort of two oaths going into the next episode. and I had a complete balls up and totally forgot what my oath was a couple of weeks ago. So I've ended up with three oaths that I have to do this week. The first being, I'll talk about the second and third first because they're going to be quicker. So the second and third were two games that are in the same series called Hunted. One, Kobayashi Tower, I think it is, which is kind of based on the whole Die Hard sort of theme, and the other called Mining Colony 415, which is based on the Alien sort of theme. They're two solo games where you're essentially just working your way through a deck, using cards to buy cards and fight off creatures, be they terrorists in the tower or aliens in the mining colony. And you have to work your way through a deck of location cards till you get to the boss at the end and defeat that before you run out of health and time. And everything you do costs you health or time. So, you know, it's nothing that's going to blow your mind, but it's a good little challenge. Little solo sort of solitaire game at it. The difference between the two, which is kind of cool, is the Kobayashi Tower has dice rolls. So whenever you're doing a challenge or a test or whatever it may be, you're rolling the dice to see if you succeed at those challenges. The reason I like the Alien one, the Mining Colony, better is because there's no dice in that one, but the challenges are done by it's like a little dexterity game where you have an alien card with a little circle on the center of it or center top, and you have to toss a token into the box lid, and a success is landing it somewhere inside that circle on the alien.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's cool because like your normal token is you have two tokens to do your challenges with. One is sort of medium size, and one's a bit smaller, sort of on the smaller size. And while you start off with six health, and if your health is 6 to 4, you throw the medium-sized token. But once you drop to 3, you can only throw the smaller token. So the smaller tokens are like a lower chance that you'll actually land somewhere on the target. And then you can get grenades and things like that throughout the game. And the grenades are like a huge token. So you barely miss with a grenade. Like you chuck, you can just drop that thing in from Although I did have a couple of times where I missed the box entirely.
I was about to say, I watched your How to Play video on this, Mitch, and your first attempt, you threw it in, you go, oh, so that'll be a miss. I'll just have to use that in.
There was one where it bounced out of the box off the table. I had to do the take completely over again.
I was going to ask, are you flicking the token or are you flicking the token? And it, oh, bullseye, yes.
Bullseye. Yeah, you just kind of, I haven't actually read if there's any specific rules about, you know, you have to have both feet on the ground or anything like that. But, I just sort of lob it in. Most of the times I can at least get it in the box, which is, you know, I'm happy with. But it just gives you that little dynamic that you don't see a lot in games like that, you know. And the dice is cool, but I just feel like this is just a little bit cooler, you know.
Mm.
So those two done. And the third one was from a couple of weeks back that I didn't get to do, and that was to play Aeon's End Legacy. Steve was interested in my opinion on this one, actually, because I've said many times that I'm not a huge deck building fan. Had a bad experience with Dominion when I sort of first got into gaming, and then I kind of have avoided deck builders ever since. But with Sarah pushing Aeon's End, this is like her number one game and how much she raves about how good it is, I thought I would give it a chance. And look, I'm opened up to the world of deck building. This is great.
Damn it.
Steve's got another purchase he needs to make. it's really good. I've had it out. It only went away so that I could get Waste Knights out. But I've been jonesing just to come and get it. I know that I went and had a meet up with Jules and Sarah and Damo from our Discord, and I even said, I think at the time we were playing Foonshade Magnet, I said, let's just get this done. I've got to get home and play Aeon's End. So, it's super cool. It's not particularly difficult, but it's just it doesn't really focus on deck building. Like, yes, that's the core mechanic, but it does a really good job of saying, you know, this is the creature. Here's the story that goes along with it. They're coming in to destroy Gravehold, which is your town or your city or wherever you live. And so that really takes sort of the forefront as opposed to just, oh, I'm going to market to buy a card and I'm putting it in my deck. You know, so it gives you something more. And it's simple to set up. It's simple to play. I'm up to the third chapter now. So as I understand it, there's more and more that will come, and it will get more and more complex as the game goes along and it builds on it, and I just can't wait. It's really cool. Like all legacies, you know, you're opening new packets and you're finding out new things as you go. So there's always that little carrot that's just keeping you to keep coming back. So that's really good. So that's tick.
Yeah, well done. That's three. That's a solid effort.
Yeah.
So is there any one question, Mitch?
Yeah, what's that?
What's next?
Oh, what game am I going to forget to do next? I'm going to put on my list, for my next oath, I will put Imperial Settlers Roll and Write. Big fan of Roll and Write, and I've had that for a little while now on my shelf of shame. It's still in shrink wrap. So I've got no excuses as to why it hasn't come out, but I'm Mitch Keddie. Before I am on the podcast again, do solemnly swear to play Imperial Settlers Roll and Write.
Now, Dominic, have you're obviously a fan of deck builders. Have you come across Aeon's End before?
I have not come across it. And this, well, I mean, I haven't played it. I've come across it a bunch of times, but I haven't played it. This is you're played the legacy version.
Correct, yeah.
And you're playing solo, or are you playing, I notice as 1-4?
I'm playing solo, but I'm playing two-handed. So you can play one character, like pure solo, but I just thought there'd probably be a better dynamic to play two characters and play them at the same time. It gives you a little bit, you know, you can take one character down the sort of the support defensive sort of track, build up their sort of ability to purchase and upgrade cards and things and support the other one, and then just put the other guy full dual style, all out, full frontal assault.
I'm sold.
Yeah.
Nice.
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, there's all a right, big
we might actually.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a big Kickstarter launching soon for more Aeon Zane stuff. So I think end of this month or start of March. It's pretty soon.
Yeah.
They actually announced it on our show. Yeah.
Is it for the Legacy or it's going to be for?
So it's called Legacy of Gravehold, I think it's called.
Yeah.
It's another Legacy version, but it's the first Legacy they were saying was aimed at people who hadn't played Aeon's End before. And it's a really, really good introduction to the system, where this is like a continuation. You this want to have already hardcore. Played Aeon's End. So, yeah, but I'm certain that they'll have a pledge where you get both.
Yeah.
You would imagine.
Yeah.
We might actually keep it with you, Dominic. Do you want to join in on this madness and
I swear
to play something?
I think I'm gonna. I'm really bad at this because I'm trying to run a company and our company's gone through crazy changes this year. We've like lost half of our employees. I'm right now the whole marketing team, which was five people that we lost.
Whoa.
I have a family, you know, and so this is tough. Pandemic Legacy Season 1 has been on my
What a choice.
For years. It has been my number one game since it came out. And I have both seasons and they sit in my closet and about, I'd say maybe, I don't know, eight times a year, I talk about it with my family and say, I really want to do this. And I've gotten an okay from my son. He'll commit to two or three times. And I've got a commitment from my wife that she'll play once, and my daughter doesn't even want to play. So it's just sitting there. So I don't think I can commit to that.
Hmm.
But that is what I was going to commit to.
Okay.
Because it really was number one. But so I've changed my mind. I'm going to commit to Aeon's End Legacy.
Yeah.
So this is an addition to the Shelf of Shame, plus it's your swear and oath. That's fantastic.
My Shelf of Shame is continually growing and I'm continually getting rid of stuff. And I don't know why. But it's mostly because I want to try to play games with my family and it's really hard to hook in. But I can hook in my son. And I just looked at this and like the Wastelands is an over three on the weight on the BGG.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't play that with anybody. But this one is a 2.8, which is about oceans. And my son can grapple with oceans and climate.
Mm.
So you know what? My son and I are going to play this. And
nice.
I'm
perfect.
Sure that we are going to do this.
I have That's a 10-year-old daughter, and I was going to see if she would play with me as well. And the other thing is, and that's one of the reasons why I decided to play two characters, because with two characters, you can have a second person step in and out as you please. So if she was not available to play one day and I wanted to play, I can play that chapter with her, well, by myself. If she's available the next day, I can say, come and sit down with me, Layla, and we'll play and you can play your character. So it's really smooth in terms of that. Plus, and this is one of the big selling points for me, each chapter teaches you a new part of the rule, a new rule on how to play. So the first chapter is really cut down and simple. It wouldn't even be a 2.8. It's probably more a 1 point something. It's really simple, the first chapter. And then at the end of that chapter, you open a couple of envelopes, you learn a new little wrinkle that then you learn for the next chapter. So it's done so well in terms of like teaching you as you progress through the game. So yeah, perfect choice to play with your 10-year-old. Awesome.
I'm so excited. Mitch, when I finally meet you in person, I'm going to have to bring gifts. I'm sure. Already
tell. Well, it sounds like there's two people that are about to purchase that game.
Yeah.
I
don't even know why I've waited so long, but it was, there's no reason to stop now.
When Dominic joined, I knew I liked him already. I mean, he's got the perfect haircut, so.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, that only leaves you, Jules. How did you go with your oath?
Yes, so my oath was to play the solo mode of Vindication, and I did the first scenario. I haven't done the second one, and I have to say, I'll say that the two scenarios are very different. And I believe that the second one is more advanced and there's actually like a boss battle that happens in the game. So I'm more excited to get into that. I have a feeling the first version was to sort of lead you and give you a feel for playing solo. I'm going to have to be brutally honest. I think that scenario has a lot of problems. Basically, the way it works is you go explore the island on your own, and when you visit a location, the locations you do not visit, you'll put little black cubes on that are corruption. And the way in which you lose the game is if all of the corruption tokens come into play, or if you manage to keep that under control. It can end that way. You can also lose by destroying six locations. So a location gets destroyed if it gets two corruption on it. Or the other way you can lose is if you manage to keep all that under control, there's a little token that progresses counter to your movement. So you progress, you know, in a linear fashion around the track, you know, your score goes up and this other token progresses the other way. And the end of the game triggers, if you haven't destroyed the island, is when you meet each other at some point on the track or pass each other. The problem and how the token progresses basically is at the end of your turn, it'll move 2 points along the track. The problem I had is I won the game on the first time. So I was like, okay, that didn't feel super challenging. And that's not really great, as we've sort of said, for solo variants or modes or games. If you can just win on the first go, it's less enticing to go back and, you know, play it again. But then I started thinking about it. I was like, hang on. You know, you only put out corruption if you visit a location. So it turned into, it takes it, because the token's only moving two spaces and the track is like almost 100 spaces around the board. I thought, well, hang on, I could just have a turn and move and not visit. And you get a little companion which interacts with that corruption that allows you to take it off and then take it off the companion and put it out of the game so it's not in play. As long as not all the tokens are in play, you're still in the game. And I thought, I could just have really suboptimal, well, it feels like suboptimal turns compared to playing the real game. You just have a turn, just move, pick up a corruption, don't visit anywhere and move on. And time it so you have a low score, but you just wait for the track to, you just set things up so you can get a whole bunch of points, but just wait until the thing, just basically pass a heap of turns, wait for it to come round and then make your move, pass it. And there's a little bit of, you lose a few points for corruption out on the board, but as long as you're still higher than the other token, you win. And when I sort of crunched through that in my head, it was a little bit disappointing that you could technically win this game every time just by, you know, just doing pass, 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 and just letting it go around and around and around, set up a move and just do it. Which is not how it's meant to be played, obviously, but it just feels, yeah.
And it's hard to play it properly when you know that you can, like, you know that that's an optimal strategy.
Absolutely. But, so I'm going to swear to play the second scenario, which I believe you will not be able to do that because there's a boss battle and there's a few more things going on. So I feel like that's going to be the scenario to play, having read through the rule book. So I'm going to swear to play that, but I'm going to add on to that because, you know, it doesn't feel like enough of a jump for me. I
was going to say, Jules, swear an oath to play your favorite game. That's not.
Yeah. I'm going to swear to play Anachrony. Now, I've played it a lot solo, but I've only played it solo. I want to play it with other people and introduce that game to other people. So I, Jules Watson, swear that I will play the second scenario of Vindication solo and teach and play a multiplayer game of Anachrony before the next time I'm on the podcast.
Very good. Well, that is that's a hefty oath. So, but that will complete the oath segment, and that'll also complete the episode for today. So, before we go, just wanted to say a huge thanks. I have a
quick question: how solemn are these oaths?
Well, there's a rocky history.
This is really important. I just went to Amazon to buy this game, and it's $157.
Whoa!
Do you want to send something else?
You, Mitch, I think you're going to have to bring me gifts if this oath is really important.
It must be at a print or something, and the price has gone up because that's not even that much here, and our dollar's worth about.
Yeah, that's right.
Like,
I might have to have you buy it for me and then ship it over. That's well,
I think one of your dollars is about 35 of our dollars. So,
look, you know, the oath is important, clearly, but it's not. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we've all succeeded every time.
I think we'd feel bad if we were the reason that North Star Games went financially bankrupt for that.
Yeah, we don't want that on our record.
So look, you're more than welcome to change it to something else because that's a big jump. Like, I wouldn't pay that much for it in Australia, like Mitch said. So
I'd reckon probably. I think it was sitting at around about. I think I picked it up for about 107 our dollars, which is probably about 70
yeah.
Yeah, around there. So yeah, that seems like it's hugely.
I think
inflated.
It must be out of print. I might do it anyways. I just had to know how solemn this oath was.
Well, I wonder if they've maybe planned it like that.
It's not like we won't invite you back on the show if you don't get it done. Yeah. But we won't invite you back on the show until you've got it done.
I wonder if the new game coming up on Kickstarter, if they've stopped print to do a print run with the new release of the new game, probably.
Yeah. It's such a perfect game for me, for my son and I, so I'm my heart is set on it now. Mm. My wallet is still thinking.
Totally understand. as I said, that'll finish us up for today. Before we go, though, I just want to say a huge thanks to you, Dominic, for joining us. Absolute pleasure.
And I was going to ask you. Really, yeah, where can people reach out to you, Dominic, and keep in touch and interact with you and talk about your games?
Yeah, that's a good. I'm on Twitter, D Crapuchets. It's a mouthful. I'm Dom Crap on Board Game Geek, and I haven't been super active on the social media stuff, but hopefully when we rebuild our company I will be active again and out there and interacting.
Fair enough. And also a big thanks to Jules and Mitch, guys. Thanks for joining again.
Thank you, pleasure, Dom. As always, really enjoyable. Thank you,
and we will catch you on the next episode. Cheers. Thank you for listening to the Board Game Barbecue. This episode, number 78, was recorded on February 20th and went live on February 22nd, 2021. Tonight's hosts were Steve, Mitch and Jules, with special guest Dominic Crapuchets from North Star Games. As always, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Hyper Viper Games, 2D6 Games and Advent Games, and all of our patrons. Thank you for your support. Don't forget to enter our giveaway by going to Advent Games' Coming Soon section of their website and then finding our post on our Board Game Barbecue community to comment on your most anticipated game from Advent's page. If you would like to find out more about the Board Game Barbecue, head to our website, www.boardgamebarbecue.com, the Board Game Barbecue community on Facebook, our Discord channel, for which there's a link in the show notes, or follow us on Twitter and Instagram at our handle at Board Game Barbecue. Subscribe to our YouTube channel for reviews, unboxings, and more content going forward. As well as that, we record 2 episodes every week, which release on a Monday and a Thursday morning Australian time. But if that isn't enough barbecue, you can become a patron, and that gets you even more Board Game Barbecue content, as well as many other perks, and you help our show continue to grow. If you'd like to become a patron, head to the link in the show notes or to patreon.com and search for the Board Game Barbecue. We are sold out at our Brisbane Board Game Barbecue Game Day event on March 27th. So if you are coming along, we can't wait to see you. But more importantly, we can't wait to run more of these events in multiple locations. So keep your ears peeled for that one. There'll be more information coming soon. But finally, thank you for listening. And here's hoping your next game is a sizzling one. Cheers.